They're more than 30 times closer to each other than we are to our next door neighbor. We're out in the boonies, and I don't mean Laredo. They've got next door neighbors. And from a planet around one, looking at the other, it's visible all day long. That'd be kind of neat. And they're so close, you could directly observe planets around them, and you could tell whether there's life or not by the characteristics of the atmospheres around the planets. And you'd have far more incentive to develop interstellar travel when you got a next-door neighbor than if you're out in the boonies. So that's just down the street, and we have a situation that's drastically different than ours, from ours. So, okay, you've seen the rest of this, or at least I've told you about it. Just think about the fact that we spend $1 trillion a year on the military. How many starving kids could we feed with that $1 trillion a year? That says a lot about us, where our priorities are, doesn't it? Okay, now, I mentioned nuclear energy just to give you some idea of what's possible. That's a nuclear-powered submarine. First one was the Nautilus, 1956. Can go around the world underwater without surfacing. They take periscope leave when they go by Detroit, I'm told. Around the world without refueling. Submarines during the war, World War II, were really surface ships that could spend maybe a day underwater. They needed oxygen for the engines, the diesel engines. You can make enough for the people, but not enough for the engines. Well, went a little bit beyond that. That's a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. I don't know who painted that stuff on there, but we have nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, huge monsters, that can operate for 18 years without refueling. Think about that for a minute. How many gallons of fuel don't get used because we have these aircraft carriers? And they've changed the whole character of war because you can go full steam ahead. In a normal non-nuclear carrier, the faster you go, the more fuel you're using. And pretty soon you got a need for more fuel, but during war it's a little hard to get it. So 18 years is kind of neat when you get down to it. Most people don't know about this, of course, and it illustrates something else. If you spend any time on the whole question of UFOs, you know there are motherships, so-called space carriers, if you will. Huge things, which carry lots of little small guys. Now, look at the picture. There's a whole bunch of little airplanes there. They don't work worth a darn on the water. And the carrier obviously doesn't work in the sky very well. The little airplanes need refueling every couple hours. Not 18 years. So you'd expect to get from another star system to ours. You'd use the mothership. Between the stars, a lot of nothing. Probably a big fusion-powered device. When you get near the atmosphere, going the speed of light doesn't do you much good. It takes a seventh of a second to go around the planet. How do you meet somebody for lunch going that fast? You know. And you have the problems of the atmosphere and stuff like that, high gravity and all that sort of thing. So you got the little ones, which land, are seen all over the planet, produce physical trace cases, and you got the big motherships. They don't land, but they're the carriers, the space carriers, if you will. Perfectly reasonable. Incidentally, I'm not saying fusion is the only thing that would work for deep space travel. I'm saying we know it would work. Undoubtedly, my mantra is that technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. The future is not an extrapolation of the past. You got to change how you do things. A laser is not just a better light bulb. Entirely different physics. That's a nuclear-powered rocket engine built by Los Alamos. It's big brother, a little larger. The 2B operates at a power level of 4,400 megawatts. And you say, what does that mean? A Grand Coulee Dam runs about 4,000 megawatts. a little larger than this thing, which is only this big. This was operated back in the 60s, for goodness sakes. So it's not a new fly-by-night idea. The normal response from the ancient academics and fossilized physicists who say there's nothing to flying saucers is, it's impossible, isn't it? And the answer is, no, it's not. You've got to change how you do things. And I've co-authored a book, which isn't here because my box didn't arrive. Blame the post office. Blame me for not sending it earlier. Science was wrong. 14 chapters. Each one of them really focused around a stupid thing said by a smart scientist. There's a quote here later of, you know, man can't fly. The British Astronomer Royal say space travel is utter bilge a year before Sputnik went up. And there's a whole long list of these. It's impossible. Meaning, I don't know how to do it, therefore nobody knows how to do it because I'm smart. But there are other smart people, probably much smarter, really. So that's the kind of thinking you got to watch out for. Everything we've ever accomplished has been said to be impossible by somebody who didn't know how to do it. Now, I threw in this for any, if there are any scientists here, fusion reactions. Nuclear fusion. Every civilization joins the Galactic Federation, so to speak, once it figures out how its star works. That's the engine of the solar system. We used to think it worked by burning gas, because what else could there be? Well, there's nuclear fusion. And instead of a star lasting a few million years, it lasts billions of years. And every star out there works by nuclear fusion. And that top line there, helium-3, the lightest gas is hydrogen, the next lightest is helium. And they're also the two most abundant substances in the universe. Wherever you're going to go, you may have trouble finding uranium, because it's very heavy. You'll find hydrogen and helium everywhere. If you react the right stuff in the right way, you get charged particles, which can be directed by electric and magnetic fields, which is kind of nice. You also produce neutrons, which go off in all different directions, and it's pretty hard to get them all to go out the back end of the rocket, because some are going this way, that way, the other way. But if they're charged particles, you can direct them with electric and magnetic fields, and so you can kick them out the back end. Now, you'll notice a little initials up there, 18.3 MeV. That's million electron volts. Now, to give you some grasp of this, normal chemical reactions, you light a match, your car engines, etc., use a few electron volts, produce a few electron volts. A few, 5 to 10, 20, that sort of thing. This reaction, 18 million electron volts. Now you got a ball game. Powerful. Different. These are things we know about. Again, I'm not saying there aren't better ways of doing things. I'm just too ignorant to know what the better things are. But you have to expect that there will be better things if we don't destroy ourselves first. Because that's the way it's always been. There are clever people out there. There's some less clever people who try to suppress the clever people. That's a different problem. Okay, so nuclear fusion is a word you should keep in mind. That's what produces the energy in the sun and in all the other stars. And every advanced civilization will know about nuclear fusion. The first H-bomb, Mike, the fireball was 3 miles wide, incidentally. You wonder what the aliens thought when they saw that happening. What are these idiots up to now? I think would be a natural reaction. That gives you some of the numbers I've already given you. People say, why would they come here? Why don't they land on a White House lawn? I hate to tell you this, but the President of the United States doesn't speak for 7 billion Earthlings. There are times when he doesn't speak for 310 million Americans. And it's a no-fly zone. There were plenty of sightings over Washington in the summer of 1952. Huge press conference. They were seen on radar. They were chased away by planes. Major event. they sure didn't try to land, risking life and limb. Why are they concerned about us? My book, Flying Saucers and Science, has 20 reasons for coming here. Honeymoon capital, this corner of the galaxy, you know. They're graduate students doing their research on the development of a primitive society. They're mining goodies here. Why would anybody go that far to mine anything? Well, you know, the price of gold right now. Gold ore is worth mining. If there's a gram of gold, a gram per ton of ore, there are a lot of things that are very valuable on this planet. And there are a lot of things that we didn't know were valuable. Uranium, it was discovered quite a while ago, but the only thing that was being used for 100 years ago is yellow glaze on table pottery. That's illegal now. It's radioactive. Not a good idea because you might dissolve some of the surface, you know. But we didn't know it was valuable. The rare earths that make the Prius possible. China's gathered up most of the rare earths on the planet. The Navy uses zirconium. Very crucial for all those nuclear-powered ships. Whoever did anything with zirconium? Air Force is using titanium. They had to develop a whole new industry. So who knows what else, because we're the densest planet in the solar system. I'm not talking about the people, probably true too. But densest planet means we got more heavy metals here than any place else in the solar system. Uranium, rhenium, osmium, other heavy metals, even heavier than gold. They're rare in the universe. And another reason for aliens to traipse about: we have learned that crazy things happen in solar systems. A big asteroid comes down and beats the heck out of a planet. Well, you better find a new home, maybe. So you always have to have a storm cellar, so to speak. Plus a place for the overflow of population before you learn to control that. Things aren't static, in other words. So you expect them to check us out. But a particular concern is we're reaching out and we are evil. Maybe that's the right word to use. If you were an alien, you wouldn't want us out there. Now, a quick look at sources of information, which the noisy negativists never talk about. Biggest study ever done for the United States Air Force, Project Blue Book, Special Report 14, completed in 1955. A press release went out. They didn't release the report. Don't want to tell the public too much, you know. They looked at 3,201 sightings. This is Battelle Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio. There are 250 charts, tables, graphs, and maps, and I can't sell you a copy because I sold who I had yesterday. This is for those who think that almost all sightings can be explained. This is a breakdown of those 3,201 sightings. Notice the bottom line. The unknowns, the only ones we're interested in, 21.5%. And if you're wondering, that's psychological manifestations. 1.5%. Now, some people will say that, oh, look, the only people who see UFOs are kooks. That's what the British Astronomer Royal said a couple months ago. No evidence, no data, no fact to support that nonsense. But he got worldwide publicity. Only kooks see UFOs. Didn't seem to know about the pilot sightings. I presume he doesn't travel around. There's an organization that's collected well over 1,000 sightings by pilots. There are plenty of sightings by astronomers. He's the British Astronomer Royal. You'd think he'd trust his fellow astronomers. He won't even acknowledge that they've ever seen a UFO. Now, here's what the Secretary of the Air Force said. On the basis of this study, we believe that no objects such as those properly described as flying saucers have overflown the United States. I feel certain that even the unknown 3% could have been explained as conventional phenomena or illusions if more complete observational data had been obtained. He said 3%. I had a copy of the report in my hand when I found this back in 1960 or so. 3 is not rounded off to 21.5. I don't care how careless your arithmetic is. And there's a separate category. Notice the category before the bottom, insufficient information. By definition, if there wasn't enough data available about a sighting, it had to be listed as insufficient information. It was not an unknown. People say to me, why does the Air Force keep lying? Because it works. Now, here's what my college classmate for 3 years, Carl Sagan, said. The reliable cases are uninteresting, and the interesting cases are unreliable. Unfortunately, there are no cases that are both reliable and interesting. That's what he said. Any evidence provided? Any reference? No, of course not. That's not true. Here's a quality evaluation. Of the best cases, 35% were unknown. Of the poorest cases, only 18.3% were unknown. Just the opposite of what Carl said. It's exactly what you'd expect if the unknowns were really something different. I'd already published this data. As a matter of fact, my congressional testimony has it. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. That's one of four major rules for debunkers. What the public doesn't know, I'm not going to tell them, is another. If you can't attack the data, attack the people. It's easier and nobody will know the difference. And do your research by proclamation. Investigation is too much trouble, and who's going to know the difference? Congressional hearings. You probably never heard about them. They were on my birthday, July 29th, 1968. I wasn't born that year, obviously, but... 12 scientists provided testimony, 6 in person, 6 in writing. I was the youngest of the group and the only one without a PhD. What do you need a piled higher and deeper degree for, with apologies to the previous speaker? outstanding, there's a paper here by Dr. James E. McDonald, information on 41 separate cases, multiple witness radar visual sightings, pilot sightings, sightings by astronomers, sightings over big cities, all kinds of outstanding stuff. It's listed on my free list because I ran out of copies to sell you. But anybody who thinks there aren't any good cases, you know, a typical good case, an RB-47 reconnaissance bomber seen over the Gulf of Mexico, then over Texas and over Oklahoma. Sighting lasted for an hour. The object station kept with them and then circled around them, which is a neat trick. This is back in the 50s. 6 highly trained crew members who saw it visually, saw it on their radar, picked up a signal from it, radioed the ground, 2 targets, tracked them as they moved right along. Jim McDonald talked to all 6 of the witnesses. Very consistent sighting, consistent testimony. And if you can't trust these guys, I mean, they're the reconnaissance bombers. They're supposed to be keeping track of what's going on out there. A lot of good cases like that. University of Colorado study, many people think, oh, they showed there weren't any UFOs, didn't they? No. Oh, they made noises that made it sound like that. The press release said, no benefit to science from study of UFOs. UFOs nonsense, scientists says. That's what the press said. A special UFO subcommittee of the world's largest group of space scientists, American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, found that 30% of the 117 cases studied in detail could not be explained. Press never told you that, though. Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Now, you'd think that astronomer royal would have at least referred to the work of Dr. Hynek, an astronomer, head of the astronomy department at Northwestern University, the Air Force Project Blue Book scientific consultant on UFOs for 20 years, mind you. And in this book has plenty of sightings by astronomers. But, of course, the noisy negativists never mentioned the book, even the astronomers. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up. Now, if you want a lot of information, you can go to Flying Saucers Are Real, my DVD. I think it's 168 minutes long. Some of it filmed at Cape Kennedy. Then there was the Roswell Report, case closed. One of my favorite book works of fiction. Well, you know, the crazy thing, the Air Force put out 2 volumes. It never said anything. And then all of a sudden, because Congressman Stephen Schiff was pushing to get more information about Roswell out, they put together this, the first volume is like a little over 2 inches thick. And has lies about me, which I resent. And they said in there they weren't going to say anything more. That was 1994. Well, they lied just before the 50th anniversary of Roswell. We had 300 newsmen down in Roswell for that, 1997. They issued the Roswell report, case closed. They came up with the silliest explanation yet. The reason people talked about bodies at Roswell is that we were dropping crash test dummies all over New Mexico. Well, they did drop a number of crash test dummies. This is right out of their report. I talked to the man on the right. The dummy's the one in the middle, in case you're wondering. You'll notice he's in a flight suit. The idea of dropping the dummies is because if you want to eject pilots from a high-performance aircraft at high speed, if you want to jump out of a balloon, like happened not very long ago, the clothing makes a difference in how quickly you'd freeze, the drag, the heating, all this sort of thing. Now, there's two major problems with this explanation. Didn't stop the New York Times from putting it on the front page. One is, no dummies were dropped until after 1953. Roswell happened in 1947. So we have time travel for crash test dummies. The second thing is, if you'll notice, and I talked to the colonel who's there, Madsen, in person. The Air Force didn't bother. There's pictures in the book, but they didn't bother to talk to him. He stressed to me that for the test to be meaningful, the dummies had to be 6 feet tall and 175 pounds. Now, how do you morph that down to a little guy 4 feet tall with a big head? You're telling me a New Mexican farmer or rancher down there is going to find one? Oh, my goodness, we've been invaded by aliens. That looked like the thing in the middle there. That's absurd. Even forgetting about the time travel. They got away with it. Lying works for the government when it comes to UFOs. Here's a line I like. Newcomb was the greatest American astronomer of the 19th century. When he died in the early 1900s, his funeral was attended by the President of the United States. Here's what he said. The demonstration that no possible combination of known substances, known forms of machinery, and known forms of force can be united in a practical machine by which man shall fly long distances through the air seems to this writer as complete as it is possible for the demonstration of any physical fact to be. Now, the date of that was October 1903. The Wright brothers' first flight was 2 months later. He obviously didn't know what he was talking about. Well, he did put in a kicker, known forms of this or that. Why did he think he knew what all those forms might be? His business wasn't aviation. But when a guy like this stands up and says something so stupid, it keeps a lot of other people from investing the money to investigate. Has a strong negative effect on development. There's Seth Shostak is with the SETI Institute. We each gave 3 lectures on the Queen Elizabeth II on its last voyage from England to New York. We were rewarded by the British UFO magazine. We each attended the other lectures. We were friendly. He attended mine, and in the course of mine, I talked about 5 large-scale scientific studies, said what was in them, asked how many people there had read it. Usually it's 2% or so. He hadn't read any of them. We debated on coast-to-coast radio. He still hadn't read any. He did admit a couple years later that he had a copy of my book, Flying Saucers and Science, on his nightstand. He didn't say he'd read it. And it's no wonder I won the debate. 57%, he got 33%, and 10% said, I don't know. SETI. Now, you understand, if aliens are landing here, who needs to listen with radio telescopes? Maybe you better learn sign language. They will never refer to the large-scale scientific UFO studies, to facts, to data, to evidence. They know nothing about interstellar travel. Jill Tarter, she was the model for Jodie Foster's Contact, the movie of the book written by Carl Sagan. And she just recently resigned in order to go full-time to fundraising. She's 68. Bright gal, no question. When you're so close to being onto something so important, you can't just stop, she said. It'll be a earth-shaking event when we make contact. A couple of years back, she said, the nearest civilization might be as close as 1,000 light years. And when we make contact, it'll change everything. They may help us solve our problems. Can't you see the conversation? Hey, out there, we need some help with some problems we have here. 2,000 years later, 1,000 years for the message to get out, and 1,000 to come out. Hey, what can we do for you guys? Does that make any sense at all? Not as far as I can tell. One of my monthly columns in the MUFON Journal talked about that. Probably made some people angry, but too bad. Stephen Hawking. If advanced life exists, they'll contact us. Aliens haven't contacted us so far. Why did he say that? How does he know whether aliens have contacted us? You'd think they'd say, hey, give us Stephen Hawking, please. We want to talk to somebody smart down there. He doesn't have a security clearance. He thinks that the scientists rule the planet? I've been one a long time, and I never thought that, even when I was working under security. Why would they contact us? Did Columbus send a message? Hey, guys, we're coming to find you out there. Be ready. Want some good food? Oh, the British Astronomer Royal. Yeah, those guys have a real track record of stupidity. He said this to Time magazine about space travel. It's utter bilge. I don't think anybody will ever put up enough money to do such a thing. What good would it do us if we spent the same amount of money on preparing first-class astronomical equipment? We would learn much more about the universe. It is all rather rot. That was a year before Sputnik. And what scientific field has benefited the most from the space program? Astronomy, of course. They finally got up above the atmosphere so we could really see what's going on. But British Astronomer Royal, no higher authority. Oh. We are told that governments can't keep secrets. Seth Shostak said that the proof that governments can't keep secrets is what a lousy job FEMA did on Katrina and how badly the post office is operated. I didn't hear him say anything about the NRO, National Reconnaissance Office, the CIA, the DIA, NSA, all these other alphabet soup agencies. They're the ones who keep the secrets. Another great astronomer, Dr. Tyson, head of the planetarium in New York, Hayden Planetarium, in a speech he gave to 1,800 people at Penn State University last year, he said, the proof that governments can't keep secrets is how much we know about President Clinton's genitalia. Think about that for a minute. What a stupid comment to me.